Okay, be honest. Have you ever sat down with your morning coffee, fully convinced you're about to conquer the world, and then somehow found yourself scrolling, snacking, alphabetizing your inbox, and wondering why your brain feels like it's running dial-up internet? If that feels a little too relatable, listen up. Everyday Dose is coffee with benefits. It's the same delicious coffee you already love, plus lion's mane, collagen protein, chaga, and nootropics to help support focus, mood, and mental clarity. Imagine your morning cup not just waking you up, but helping your brain fire on all cylinders without the jitters, without the crash, and without the sudden urge to reorganize your sock drawer. And because the collagen is built right in, you're supporting smoother joints, stronger hair and nails, and healthier looking skin, all at the same time. Everyday Dose is coffee plus benefits. They combine high quality coffee with powerful ingredients like lion's mane, chaga, collagen protein, and nootropics to fuel your brain, boost focus, and give you clean, sustained energy all day long. It tastes just like coffee without the downside. No crash, no jitters, just clean, sustained energy. Right now, get 61% off your first Coffee Plus starter kit, free peppermint mocha creamer plus for the holidays, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/mindful or use code mindful at checkout.
We may not always want to be that person when someone, you know, does something that triggers us, and we want to be like, we might want to respond and say, that wasn't cool what you said, you know, but it's, we really want to pause and we want to listen to what they're saying, because they're coming from a place of trigger too. So if they're out of their regulation state and they're coming at us, probably most likely activated, we want to co-regulate the situation. So we don't want to come into their activation as well. We want to pause and we want to acknowledge the place that they're coming from and acknowledge what they're saying and acknowledge their feelings, even though as hard as it could be. And that doesn't mean that they're right when we do that, but then we want to be able to have compassion for the person. So being able to, you know, map that system helps us do that. And then we want to be able to respond.
Karen Canham, thank you for joining me on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me. I'm grateful to be here.
So you are a board certified wellness coach and a nervous system specialist. How long have you been a wellness coach?
I've been board certified for about a year now. I've been coaching for over 18 years.
Oh, okay. You don't look old enough to be doing something for 18 years.
Well, thank you. It's Botox.
Is this all generally, is your experience like in person generally, like one-on-one kind of, or?
Yeah, so it started in person, and now it's moved into this online space, which is a newer thing for me that I'm starting to do. It's really cool because I get to talk to people all over the world.
Nice. And when you say nervous system specialist, what does that mean? What does that mean?
It means that that's what my focus is. So along my journey with wellness coaching, I started in fitness and it just kind of evolved along the way to doing different types of modalities. And what I've landed on here is that the nervous system is really where it's at. If it's not regulated, it's really hard to get anything else in line. And what I do with nervous system work is basically three things. So I utilize neuro tools, which are based off of neuroscience. I use somatic experiencing, and then I do parts work therapy.
So neural tools and somatic experiencing and the parts work are the neural tools?
They are all three separate things. So okay. Neural tools are something specifically that you would use that would stimulate the vagus nerve.
Okay. So neural tools, somatic experience, and then you said parts work? So if you started in fitness, what led you to get into this? Was this like out of your own pain somehow and you had to figure it out? Or that's a common theme I find I hear.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I actually had trauma in my childhood and developed a pretty severe eating disorder from that trauma. I did not go into treatment for that eating disorder until I was an adult, early adult. So fitness was actually like a not a great thing for me when I was younger. It was over-exercising, kind of that ortho-anorexic thing of really eating healthy, that kind of thing. When I went to treatment, I was not able to exercise at all. They wouldn't allow me to. And then what they did allow me to do eventually was to do yoga. And that was really the only thing that I could do that wasn't triggering for me.
Who's they, by the way? You said they wouldn't allow
Like therapist, treatment team, right? Okay. Gotcha. Psychiatrist, right? That was their treatment plan of like, you're not in a space of where exercising is a healthy thing for you, which looking back, I totally agree on. But yoga became part of my therapy. And once I came out of that residential treatment center, I had a therapist that actually ran a yoga therapy group. And that really was where I started to see a lot of shifts in internally and how I operated in life and really started to heal. So that obviously yoga has a lot of somatics in it. I didn't know that at the time. But yoga was always like an internal thing to me. It was never about like the physical aspect. And then I became a yoga teacher. And that's where the coaching started for me. Just how I taught yoga. I never cared if people were in the correct alignment. I was just kind of like, if it doesn't feel good, don't do it. And it was more about the internal experience for me. And then I just attracted clients that way of what I would say in the classes. They would reach out to me and, you know, ask for help further in different areas. At the time, I was still working in my corporate job. And then I was living in Illinois at that time. And then I was promoted and moved to California. And I kind of gave up my business, my wellness business of what I was doing, which really wasn't a business to me at that time. It was just kind of something that I loved and kind of was growing on the side for me. I didn't realize until I had moved to Los Angeles how big it had really grown for me. I was making as much money on the side doing that as I was at this Fortune 50 company. But I still had issues. I still had like that perfectionistic issue of like, I have to be, have a certain title, you know, this overachieving in this Fortune 50 company. And so that was the direction that I took. And it took me probably 7 years or so to realize like, what am I doing? I learned a lot in that Fortune 50 company about leadership, and there was a lot of things that I loved about it. But what I would do in my spare time was the wellness piece of it. And there was still a lot of internal struggle of just like, it was never good enough. And so that's when I found neuro tools, and I found the somatic work and neuroscience and how the nervous system really shapes how we're able to show up in life. So if we're not coming from a regulated place, then we're making these decisions from a dysregulation. And it's really, these decisions then aren't made from our true authentic self. Right. So,
gotcha.
Then I kind of was like, what am I doing? This is not what I want to be doing, and quit my job. And then decided to take this full time. And then my fiance and I moved to Florida. So I've been trying to work on this digital space now that, you know, I'm in a brand new area where I don't know people as well. And so that's been a whole new experience as well.
Gotcha. Well, that's an interesting story. It's crazy how impactful the yoga practice can be for people and like create a turning point in their life. It definitely resonates with me. There were so many times where I felt like arriving on the mat was like coming into my sanctuary, where like the growth was all happening like inside. And, you know, it wasn't so much about the physical stuff, but it led to like all kinds of transformations in different aspects of my like whole sense of being and the way I like showed up in the world. Or had an eating. It's funny, they said you couldn't exercise. You know, I work in a gym environment, and there's been countless times where I've had people come in looking for answers in the gym, and then they like tell me they're like the first day they're going over like their like health intake, and you know, they're getting 5 hours of sleep, they're up till like 1 a.m. answering work emails, they're schlepping kids around to practices in between stuff. They like eating on the run all the time. And I'm like, yeah, there's no answer here for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, the only thing we could do in the gym is like damage you more. Like everything we're going to do here is going to be stressful, and you are stressed to the gills already. So let's spend the next half hour like breathing or, but yeah, but that's our instinct is, you know, we try to fix. So you were, so do you know how, did you ever get any insight of like how your eating disorder emerged or like what kind of, what you were trying to solve for that or how that was?
Oh yeah.
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 Are you?
I'll talk about it a little bit just because I'm a little sensitive into how much I say about it, just because it was an environment and a family situation. And so just the environment that I was in was really controlling. And so it was a way for me to kind of take back control and also be seen. You know, had a parent that was very emotionally disconnected and, you know, had a lot of own trauma themselves is what I came to figure out. And so just wasn't, a lot of that was transferred onto me. And so of course I didn't know any of this at the time when all that was taking place. It was just like a subconscious thing that was happening of like just a way for me to cope with the environment that I was in. But that was all the work that I did through therapy, a lot of looking into the past and looking into these dynamics, right? Which is great and I think essential. But it comes to a point of like, okay, now I know this and now what? You know, it's like you don't want to keep living in that space. And ultimately, like you're responsible for your life and like how you show up and what you decide that you get to do and how if you want to struggle and suffer or if you want to, you know, feel the pain and then move forward. So
it's not your fault, but it's your responsibility.
Correct. Yeah.
So, so you got like awareness of where it came from. Have you, do you think that that's still like, how's your relationship with your parents now over that? Like, have you stayed in contact with them through your like healing process and been able to communicate openly with them and,
I have. There was participation from them and family week when I was in that eating disorder treatment, and there was some growth at that point, and there was definitely some change that happened with my mother. I was 32 at the time, and this was the first time that she told me that she loved me ever. So that was a huge thing to me, and a huge thing that she was able to realize like how damaging that was. My father and I were always really close. I'm very much like my father. The problem was with my father is that he had a hard time being in between and navigating both of those relationships. There was like a jealousy component, I think, from my mother of like the relationship that I had with my father. And so actually after treatment, my relationship with my father was not as close. That's kind of what I saw and what I've decided is that like, that's what his choice is, you know, is that he's going to choose this. And it's just like, I can't be the one who's in between all the time. I do my best. There's been times where the relationship is better with both of them and times when it's not. I was just in Nashville for a week and a half because my dad had open heart surgery. And so I was there to help him and be there for him. And there was challenges and I was glad that I was able to be there. But then there's always more learning that comes up. That's like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Right. And so to still navigate that space of like having this relationship with them where, my parts aren't overtaking my true self, right? Being really aware of that and able to have, you know, the compassion for them and continue that relationship the best that I can.
That makes sense. How'd your dad pull through with the procedure?
He's good. That's yeah, good. He's doing really well. Thank you.
So you mentioned a moment ago my parts, and mm-hmm. I assume you're referring to like parts work. Is that like the IFS style modality where you're kind of analyzing and working with the different, I guess, personality traits that we develop?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I was introduced to the IFS parts work when I was actually got out of the residential eating disorder treatment. And it wasn't something that really resonated with me at the time. I don't think I was ready to do the type of work looking back at it. I think it's something that can be really uncomfortable, I think the somatic work helps to do the somatic work to feel comfortable in your body and really feel into those emotions to be able to access those parts at first. But yeah, what I found is to not just have awareness of those parts, but to have really like a lot of compassion for them and not have judgment around them is a huge thing.
Gotcha. Well, touch on the somatic thing. So that's, you feel like the somatic work can be like an easier on-ramp for people to work on themselves, like maybe like a simpler way to, or more inviting or something, where they're not faced with like an idea that really challenges something that maybe they've been, you know, thinking a certain way about for a long time. Where somatic is what? More just like working through the body itself?
Yeah, somatics would be feeling into the sensations. I mean, you're not even just feeling like all the sensations. So even sight would be like, okay, I'm just going to orient myself into this space right now and really look at my light switch and really see how many screws are in this light switch. What's the color of this white, you know, really get into the nitty gritty of all these sensations. But then we can, and it depends. It depends on the person. Usually visually people tend to be able to do that easier than like going into the body. So,
and that's, you know, an like idea to, just to like get present, to have your attention, like rest on something, to focus on something.
Yeah. It's to get present and then to ultimately start titrating into that body and feeling into the emotions of the body. So then from there you can go in and be like, okay, you know, start and from top to bottom or like whatever. I mean, there's millions of ways that you can do it, but just go through and say, where am I feeling that I'm like holding in my body? And then sitting there with that feeling or that sensation of holding in my body. What does that feel like? Do I feel tightness? Do I feel warmth? And then from there, then we're able to go into a deeper place of like, where do you feel that specific part in your body? So we might use like a specific scenario that we're talking about of something that was triggering for you. And then we can visualize that situation and then we can say, okay, where do we specifically feel that? Where are we holding that in our body? Because ultimately that's what's happening. Whatever these things are that are happening to us in the external world, they get stored in the body. And if they don't move through the body, then we're going to stay stuck and we start to collapse even more and more. So we want those things. It's natural for these things to happen to us, but we want to be able to move them through the body. And what you were saying in the beginning about the exercise piece is funny of like, that's what we're taught to do, especially in the United States, I feel like, is this pushing harder, doing more, like that's just like scattered in front of us, right? And so to be able to really stop that pushing and listen in and allow those things to have space and allow those things to be heard really helps the nervous system feel safe. And then those things can process through the body.
Right. Yeah. It's just interesting. You mentioned like the United States, like there's a cultural and societal component to the drive for productivity. And you know, I'm sure other areas have too, but I have heard people talk and write about like how different it can be in other places where like people spend a lot of day like farting around. You know, they don't have to say, like, it's totally normal, like pull out some lawn chairs and like sit outside and stare at the trees, like no, you know, and just be with people, like no task. Mm-hmm. We're very like, task oriented, accomplish, you know, get more things done in time, in a certain given time is some type of, accomplishment or badge of honor. And I sometimes just wonder, like I spend a lot of time wondering like, what are we even doing here? What's the meaning of life kind of stuff? And it's like, is it inherently better that we're more productive? Like there's no solutions, there's only trade-offs. Like what are we prioritizing for? Is it the overall benefit of society and humankind long term? Is it to like get better quarterly earnings, you know, this year? Or and what's driving? And I think we're so influenced by it all that we don't know how much we're influenced by it. And even when you can see it, it's like you can quickly and you could like change your mind about a certain task, like you'll just it's very easy to just revert back to it. I mean, one thing I've noticed with online content is, and I noticed it with my wife, and I'm in like a, I guess like a creators club thing where we meet every month or two, and people are always trying to figure out how to like win online. And it's like you could get a, you like have this passion that you wind up trying to go from, let's say, the brick and mortar space, like go to the digital space. So it starts off like you're doing something you love. It's like something you've already been doing. And then it morphs into something like, well, how do I maximize the visibility like of the algorithm or whatever? And it's like you could quickly lose sight of the fact that you just want to do something you like doing. And it becomes like no longer a passion, but now it's more of like a weird job you have to try to meet the demands of like the societal expectation or the cultural thing. And yeah, that's a slippery slope that we're all probably vulnerable to. Or like a trap we can get in very easily.
Unknowingly. Yeah. Yeah. I have never lived outside of this country, but even moving from Chicago to California was a huge eye-opening experience for me. I mean, at that point, I did feel like I moved to a different country because the culture was so different. And I struggled from when I first started, even though I was at the same corporation, I was in a different role. I was in a different area. And I really struggled with just my personality, that I was like very type A and like push harder and go, 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 do, do, do. And, you know, I had a territory that I was in charge of and leading, and people were like, whoa, this is like, you know, we get to work around 10 around here and we leave at like 4. That's how we operate. And I'm like, yeah, that's not okay. So it was, yeah, I mean, even across the United States, I think there's like a huge difference, but overall what's put out to us, and in my opinion, a lot of that is just the corporate push, you know, that's what they push of like, this is our return on investment. And I think that if you, the leaders, the top leaders necessarily, and what, from what I've seen, they're not necessarily operating in that way. Like they've uncovered like, yeah, that's not really sustainable, but they're still teaching downward of like, you know, there's a lot of pressure of like that. I need you to perform and do all these things.
Yeah. It's an unfortunate side, like of, I guess, capitalism, like you, it could foster so much innovation and technology and creativity and all this stuff. But also there's something about the corporate structure that not just like diffuses accountability, which could be like real problematic, I think, for a society and hurting people. But also it's like this responsibility to just do better. It's like built in. So like you could have a bunch of good people with good intentions working together, but they're in a structure where there's like an inherent machine driven for productivity. So like if you want to chill out and go in at 10, it's like almost like, oh, then I'm letting people down. You know, it's like you have, you're affecting the your relationships with the people around you, and people are counting on you. And it's a lot of pressure that just arises out of the mere like structure of a business, a corporation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you mentioned like people operating or leading and like the effect of their nervous system and how that, I guess, would affect the way that they show up. When you, so the three things that you mentioned, like the parts work, the somatic experience, and the neuro tools, touch on these neuro tools. Are these things to like, are these like technology things, like gadgets to try to just give you a pattern interrupter to shift the nervous system in a moment?
There are a lot of gadgets out there now, which, to be honest with you, I haven't tried most of them, and a lot of them are very expensive. You can do these things without any gadgets at all that are easy, that can stimulate that vagus nerve. So a lot of them are going to be with your ear. So just like massaging your lobe, or even coming into the inside and just giving yourself a massage right here. When you do things like that, it just brings your system back into. So what we talk about is that we have three different areas in the system. So we're either in a dorsal, which is a shutdown state. We're in ventral, which is where we want to be spending most of our time, which is like this regulated state. Or we're in a sympathetic state, which is this like go, 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 do, do, do.
And dorsal and ventral, you're referring to the branches of the vagus nerve?
These are where we can operate in our nervous system. So the vagus nerve is just a nerve that's going to run down from basically right here all the way down into the gut. And so we can talk about that too, of like why there's so much, why we talk about the gut as the second brain, right? But what I'm talking about is these three spaces that you tend to be in are just like your, where you can fall in your nervous system in general. So that parasympathetic, sympathetic state, but we're talking specifically about this, the state of being of like, the dorsal is a place of where you're really shut down. And then the ventral is a place of where you're in your regulation. And then that sympathetic place is where you're operating and on that very like go, go, go. And I like to think of it as a scale of like 0 to 10. And a lot of times that's how I will check in with my clients. Like, where are you right now in this moment? And because then that not only helps in the session, but it helps them in their real life of starting to determine where am I on that scale. And ultimately, I can use a neuro tool to kind of get myself back into this regulation point. We like to use the neural tools to kind of get make sure that we're in this regulated space so that we can go in and start doing that work of like more of that somatic experiencing and that parts work. Because if we're not able to access those things. And then ultimately, we want to get to a place of where we don't really need the neural tools as much. In the beginning of someone who's new to this work, oh, the neural tools are like a very helpful thing for people that'll, they'll immediately feel that release of being able to feel calmer or being able to like increase that energy a little bit more. But ultimately, as they start to do the work, they'll experience that they don't need the neuro tools as much and that they can just kind of like pop in somatically and feel into their experience.
Gotcha. Are there any other ones other than like the ear massage that you are lean on as like staples?
Yeah, the other one that I really love is just like turning your head slowly to the side and just holding here to the side. And then you can even look up with your eyes over into the corner. So over the right shoulder, and then you're looking up over into the right corner. A lot of people at this point will start to experience a lot of eye fluttering and they won't be able to like hold that gaze at all. Usually that tells me that they're more in a sympathetic state. These tools are really simple. And they seem silly to a lot of people, but when you start to incorporate them, and then it's like, oh yeah, that does really work.
Yeah, the eyes are no joke. There's something about it. I think I was reading, there was a book, I think it's been out a long time. It's like accessing the power of healing of the vagus nerve or something. And a lot of it is just like holding your eyes one way and then the other way, and like super simple,
mm-hmm.
super cheap.
Right.
Assuming you have eyes. And like works in like, I don't know, a minute. Kind of crazy.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to, it just reminds me of like, I do work with a lot of corporations, and one corporation that I worked with recently was all men, which to be honest with you, it's usually more challenging for men to do this type of work just based off of the differences in men or in women and like being more, open to explore emotions. And, you know, their perspective was kind of like, yeah, I don't really want to do this. But the feedback at the end was like, yeah, I mean, it worked. And I utilize them now, like when I'm out in the field, when I want to like explode on my employees. So,
yeah, I mean, that's another social and cultural thing. It's like men are programmed to be less vulnerable, especially around their emotions. And so you work with corporations, is that's a main focus for you, or what does that look like? You have like a seminar and a company puts a bunch of their people in a room and you give them a spiel where you like teach them these tools, or like logistically, what does it look like?
Yeah, so it can look different depending on what the corporation wants. I'll do some different things. So either I can come in and be a speaker for them. I run workshops and I do one-on-one with their employees as well. So usually if someone wants speaking, they'll reach out to me specifically about that. But usually how it works is I'll meet with either the owner of the company or someone in HR or learning and development. And we kind of talk about like what's happening in their company right now that they feel like is hurting like where they're trying to move and what direction they're trying to move into. And, you know, usually they already kind of know, like, this is the type of work that they are looking for, right? And so then we talk about, like, what the goals are, what the outcomes they want to have, and then, like, how we can structure that. So it's very different depending on each company. I might start with, like, this company, for example. It was a little bit more challenging just because it was something that was all men, blue collar working. And so to do this type of work, I knew was going to be challenging, and the owners of the company knew it would be challenging as well. And so we really wanted to think about how can we build that trust first. And so we did it as, like, a workshop for a certain division of that company first. And then we were able to move into more one-on-one work, which is ultimately what the company wanted to do. And then we moved into other divisions of holding those workshops so we can kind of spread across the company.
What's an example of, like, why a company would feel they would need that? Like, what's the, I don't know, problem they're trying to address?
Most times it's communication is what they tell me. Behind that communication is what I see is that we're complicated people, right? And so there's a lot of layers that are showing up of why there's a communication breakdown. And usually it's because our parts are getting in the way. And so becoming more aware of what our parts are and being able to understand what other people's parts are. So we talk about mapping other people's systems, mapping your own systems. Then we're able to communicate from a place of regulation instead of a place of shutdown or that sympathetic place.
Hello, it's Les here. I want to offer my sincere gratitude to you for tuning in. I know there are seemingly infinite options to place your attention these days, and I am humbled that you chose to spend this time with me. I also want to let you know that I am opening up a few more online private coaching sessions. I've been coaching clients for over 17 years, and I've always found it very rewarding to guide someone through a transformational phase of their life. If you would like to play a larger role in your sense of well-being, feel better in your body, and support your own healing or growth journey, please check out my services at themindfulmovement.com/less to see if we would be a good fit.
It's not like a fast process depending on the group that you're going into, right? So you really need to start pretty, like, basic with some of them to be able to move into these more in-depth places. And so it's not like a one workshop type of deal. Yes, they can get a lot out of one workshop, but the work takes time. And I would say that's true for my individual clients as well. They'll notice relief after the first session. They'll start to say, like, oh, my husband noticed changes in me after, like, the third session. But ultimately, like, it's a process. There's a lot that, you know, there's a lot to us. We're very complex, and there's a lot of layers to delve into there.
Yeah, we are complex. I remember hearing somebody talk about the ideas of, like, complexity relative to being complicated, and how, like, humans are complex. They're not complicated. Like, an airplane is complicated. Like, you could take it apart, but when you could put it back together and with, like, very high predictability, understand how it's going to behave. But, like, a human's, there's too many, like, dynamic moving systems that are always interacting with each other. Like, you can't do, it doesn't work like that. But so you said get them the mapping system. So are you basically talking about, like, being able to name your parts and then see parts in others so that you can navigate with less, like, issues around communication between different people? Or?
Yeah. So when I talk about mapping systems, when there's a situation that happens, a lot of times the person will feel like energy hit them, right? That's what I kind of call, like, that's the triggering moment. And so when we feel that, we want to really, like, recognize that we're feeling that and be able to, like, ground. So feel our feet on the floor. And then we can kind of, the more we learn the mapping, the quicker we can do it, right? So we can see the other person. We're like, okay, what is their tone of voice? What's their body language? What are their emotions? What are the sensations that they may be having? And then we want to do that in ourselves too. It sounds like a lot to go through, but the more you do it, the quicker that you can do it. And then I always tell my clients are in corporate situations, like, we want to be the leader. And I think that leadership word, a lot of people are like, well, I don't want to be a leader. I'm not trying to be like a, I'm not trying to be a director or vice president or anything like that. And it's like, well, leader can be someone who's not even working, right? What I mean about that is just having this awareness, being really emotionally intelligent and tuned with like what's going on with your body is where I'm coming from when I'm talking about that leadership. So even though we may not always want to be that person, when someone, you know, does something that triggers us and we want to be like, we might want to respond and say, that wasn't cool what you said, you know, but it's, we really want to pause and we want to listen to what they're saying because they're coming from a place of trigger too. So if they're out of their regulation state and they're coming at us, probably most likely activated, we want to co-regulate the situation. So we don't want to come into their activation as well. We want to pause and we want to acknowledge the place that they're coming from and acknowledge what they're saying and acknowledge their feelings, even though as hard as it could be. And then, and that doesn't mean that they're right when we do that, but then we want to be able to have compassion for the person. So being able to, you know, map that system helps us do that. And then we want to be able to respond from a place of regulation from ourselves after we're able to acknowledge what they're saying.
So what are some of the tactics like in, I mean, I haven't worked, I don't, nobody would want, I wouldn't want to work for a company that would want me as an employee. I mean, I haven't worked for a company in so long. It's like, I'm so removed. I can't imagine being in a corporate world. And like, especially during the era of, I don't know, being like politically correct or whatever, like I would fail. But so I have no insight of like what that looks like today. I know people that work for corporations and like they're, I'm sure they've learned how to like juggle the nuance of like dealing that. And, but I can't imagine it myself. Like what does it look like you're, as far as like how to recommend this process? This like making sure you're regulated or you're trying to co-regulate. Let's say somebody's like, you know, where are those reports? I thought we were going to have them yesterday and they're not here. And there's like a confrontation or whatever, which I assume there's like lots of little, I assume, I don't know, like lots of little confrontations or some type of, you know, like companies are filled with people talking to each other about whatever has to be done for the company. So there's probably just ongoing, constant, you know, I don't want to say negotiations, but encounters. So with all the like the complexity of the human being and all the varying emotions that could be in any given moment, that where, you know, who knows? Like I would assume people are constantly bringing in the stress from home to work or whatever, like whatever they have else is going on in their personal life. And then you still want to be like productive and not be the asshole of the office or whatever. Like, what do you do in the moment?
Yeah. So this is kind of like a really loaded question because again, there's so many layers. What I will say is that ultimately I do believe from my experience and even doing this work on the other side now with corporations is it does stem from the top because when you are at the top, you are the leader and you ultimately have the say of how things are going to go. So one of the biggest things that I will see is that the person who's either the owner of the company or, you know, has a pretty high position in the company is like, well, they. And a lot of times, you know, I have to kind of work with them and then come to, you know, tread lightly of to like get them to realize like ultimately like, you're really capable of doing this work because of like where the life that you've led and where you are, right? And if we can get you to really understand what this work is and really change and transform in yourself and then put lead in this way of doing this work, it's just going to trickle down. So that's...
You get a lot of like ego pushback from if people are in a high position and they feel that they are successful and have done good or whatever.
Yes and no. I think surprisingly, there's been a lot of people that are really open open to it. And I do think it's because they do come to me and they do realize like there's a problem here and it's not working and I want this to change. And so they already have, like, in the coaching world, we're like, where are you on the scale of like change, right? So they're already in that place of wanting to change. And so I find it actually pretty surprising that most people are pretty open to like, okay, yeah, you know, I want to change and I need to do the work myself. And ultimately they know, like, they are the ones that are responsible. The other thing is just like culture in general. So a lot of times I'll see the culture of like, you know, because I'm up here, I have the say so, and like, I get to do these certain things. So I may be able to, just for example, I may be able to, work 30 hours this week because like my dad's in the hospital. So I have, you know, like I can be more flexible, where someone who's like in a lower level position, that's like clocking in and out, well, you're going to have to take paid time off for that. And like, I'm not necessarily going to approve your paid time off. So we have to look at it in a way of like, we want to be able to make sure like that culture exists, that we're acting in the way of like how we're carrying out ourselves and what we're expectations of are of ourselves, that we're giving that to all the employees in the company. So I see that a lot. I actually see most people in the lower level positions are very highly stressed and so really not even capable of doing this work because they're so above and like stressed, where like someone who's like a CEO of a company, you know, they've had a lot that they've been able to do in their life. And when you talk about like the outside world coming in, that's a huge thing. And that's been a conversation of topic in these workshops and these one-on-one sessions that I do with corporate, is like, it's been embedded of us is to leave our personal life at the door. And that's just not the reality. Our personal life is who we are, and it is going to show up. It's just how do we communicate of like what's going on in a healthy way. And so that's a whole workshop that I've led for companies.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. It sounds really useful. I imagine too, like, if let's say there's a corporate structure and there's a lot of people that they know the top dog as a certain way, like they already have a lens that they're viewing that relationship through based on their history and every encounter they've ever had and every, you know, demanding email or whatever. And then if that person changes, like, I could see if somebody new came in with a different vibe, how like the culture could probably shift pretty quick, because they're like, ah, fresh start. And it could like, they can harmonize with the new leadership. But I could also see on the flip side that if somebody at the top is trying to change, and even if they are successfully changing the way that they show up as a leader in hopes that it trickles down and changes the culture, it's like all the people down below, you have to convince them that it's different. Like, they already have all the evidence from prior that they're showing up to the relationship with all that built into their lens of who you are and their relationship to the company with you at the top. So I would think that is like not an easy thing. Like, even if the leader does come in and say, okay, I take responsibility, I want to lead from a place with whatever, more emotional intelligence, more compassion, understanding that these people have their, you know, at home stuff with them at work or whatever, they're real people and such. But I could see that would be like tough to convince everybody else, like in their body, like wholeheartedly, that things are better or changing. Do you find that at all? Like, is it, even if somebody does the change, is that leadership, that change in leadership energy, automatically trickle down? Or does everybody have to be kind of like reprogrammed to believe it in a way?
Yeah. Yes and no would be my answer. So I'll go back to the co-regulation piece, and that's something huge in nervous system work that we really want to pay attention to, of like, am I coming from a regulated place? Because if I'm not, then we're energy, we're made of energy, right? And so like, if my energy is in a certain place, then I'm going to draw that energy of other people into that place as well. And so I will say yes, that it is very big and makes a huge difference depending on if that leader is coming from a regulated place. And I don't mean perfection, because we're human and we're not going to be from a regulated place all the time. But the more that we can communicate from a regulated place, the safer people feel. And so when I go to work, the biggest thing that people want to feel, they want to be seen, they want to be heard, and they want to know that they're in a safe place. And so if I'm going to work and I'm dealing with a leader who is not regulated, I'm going to even start to become not regulated. We're going to see high turnover most likely. And so the other piece of that is there's a lot of complication when it comes to corporate, and it just gets more and more complicated based on what's going on in the world. And so I'm not a believer that like this, you know, some corporations will be like, oh, well, you're my family, or even small businesses, it's like, we're all family. I'm not a believer in that, because it's a business. At the end of the day, it is a business. And so there's that component, and then there's a component of all the legalities too. And so there is a line of like, how can I communicate to someone, you know, that I'm not in business with, or I'm not in a corporate world with, right? They're not in my company, right? I don't have the potential of being sued based off of how I'm communicating to them and like how I'm treating them. It's very different than when you're communicating with your spouse, for example, right? And so it is complicated, but I will say that I ultimately believe in what I see, that if we are coming from that place of regulation and we're leading from that place, then we will start to regulate the people around us. Like, it is our responsibility as a leader to be regulated and allow regulation around us. Now, there's a lot of other issues that come into play. And then, you know, nothing's going to be perfect. So it's like you have to decide as a corporation, like maybe you can't save everybody, right? And so some people just aren't the right fit. And some people just, you know, they need something different. A lot of times they're just like in the wrong position.
You mean like the wrong role of the company for them, or?
Yeah, they could be in the wrong role. It's just not suited for their personality and who they are, or overall, like they just don't fit into that culture of that company. So as a leader, you have to decide, like, this is what my culture is going to be. This is what I represent. And then, you know, there can be, I kind of was always a disruptor when I was in my corporate job. And so you have to decide, you know, are you going to, ultimately, as the worker, like, you are working for someone. So like, they get to decide like what that culture is going to be. And are you going to accept what that's going to be? You still get to have your opinions and your contributions, but you have to accept what the decision is going to be.
Gotcha. As a, like a board certified wellness coach, how much do you pull from like the other modalities of wellness, I guess, outside of like nervous system work when you're working with people, or especially in groups?
Yeah. So I don't do, even though I'm certified in functional medicine, I don't do a whole lot of anything that's like supplement based or nutrition based. It's just not my love. My love has always been in the headspace. And so, I do have one client that I work with still, that I've worked with for a long time, that I'm more in that space of more of like the physical health aspect of it. However, what I will say is, for example, going through this, you know, whole cardiac thing with my dad, I became very interested in the mental side of it. So it's just not like, it's never been, well, I mean, I think in the beginning, but like, it's really never been an interest of mine of like getting people to realize, like change their habits of eating and change their ways of exercising. And, I love to talk about that stuff, but I don't think it's the foundation. I think the foundation is in the brain. And that's what I realized through my process of being in the wellness field, is that like We can try to do these things. We can try to change the way that we eat, for example, but if we're not coming from a regulated place, we're always going to struggle. So I think from my own experiences, that's why I've really been drawn to that. And to go back to the cardiac thing, that's what I noticed too, of just like, there's a lot of depression after people have open bypass surgery. And just, you know, then like to see how the cardiologist kind of like put into the care plan of like the mental health, like for my father was interesting to me. And
could you share that? What did they put in?
Not much. Yeah. It was okay. Kind of like, this happens a lot to people, you know, and it's probably a good idea that you have someone that you can talk to, but there's not like, I mean, a cardiologist, I don't know how much education they have in like mental health, but it's probably very, very small. I know like most MDs have like one class in nutrition. However, what I will say is I'm starting to partner with a cardiologist in Southwest Florida who, it ironically to me, and it's like awesome to me because I think it's harder sometimes to get more of these MDs on board with this type of, a lot of people think it's still like woo-woo type of thing, you know? And so to be able to get these people on board of like, this is a huge component of why people are in this place in the first place of like the stress, right? So how can we reduce stress with these modalities that we're using? But then even if they have these surgeries, like how can we use these modalities as they heal to help them live, change, right? And help them do things differently.
Yeah, I mean, in the context of a cardiologist too, it's like they're electricians essentially, and they're reading all this electrical information from the heart, the cardiovascular system, and like they use HRV now as an interesting, like useful biomarker or whatever. And it's like, well, you could alter your HRV in like a minute of nervous system regulation stuff. Like you could influence it very quickly. So that's probably a good entry point, having a relationship with a cardiologist to talk about this stuff. What about like, so with all the work you've done, Karen, how have you incorporated what you understand about this stuff into like your more like day-to-day habits or like your lifestyle?
That's a good question because it evolves. You know, I used to do a lot of yoga and go to yoga every day. And now since we moved to Southwest Florida, I haven't found a place to go into.
That's a bummer.
Yoga. I know, it totally sucks. So what's really important to me now is that I get outside in the morning. I usually walk barefoot, which people in my neighborhood think I'm very strange, but I kind of like just to feel the ground on my feet. I like to feel the sun on my face. It just gives me, I mean, I don't go for a long walk, which has changed, right? It used to be like, oh, I need to get my steps in. And now the focus is like, oh, I just need to regulate as I wake up. And it's kind of how I start my day. And then it just depends. It depends on my day. I think a big thing for me right now is like really paying attention to when I start to feel like I'm pushing into stop and pull away. That's not always still easy for me to do.
What does pulling away look like for you? Is it like the ear rub or?
Use a whole lot of, I'll use the NeuroTools when I feel like I'm like when I'm escalated. But when I feel like I'm like pushing through work, for example, if it's like, oh, I need to do this because like kind of what you were talking about with like the social media thing and like showing up there because I need to get like published in this publication, for example. And so like, I need to do this right now. And it's like recognizing when those thoughts come in and recognizing when I just start to feel like not like I'm in my flow, I will get up. When I look back and I think about like when I was working in corporate, you know, it's like you're sitting there and you're working for like 4 hours. Depending on what role I was in, which I didn't do well in those roles. I did much better when I was like out in the field because I had to move around.
Hello, it's Les here. I want to offer my sincere gratitude to you for tuning in. I know there are seemingly infinite options to place your attention these days, and I am humbled that you chose to spend this time with me. I also want to let you know that I am opening up a few more online private coaching sessions. I've been coaching clients for over 17 years, and I've always found it very rewarding to guide someone through a transformational phase of their life. If you would like to play a larger role in your sense of well-being, feel better in your body, and support your own healing or growth journey, please check out my services at themindfulmovement.com/less to see if we would be a good fit.
Well, a big thing for me now is being able to recognize, because I love so much of what I'm doing, that I can get like lost in it and I can kind of forget about like what's going on internally, where my body's like, I'm hungry, or you need to get up and move. And so being able to pause and do those things. So I guess, you know, there's a lot of like, just, you know, spending the time in the week and a half of being with my dad and coming back and being like, oh, there's a lot of things that I feel kind of behind on. And, you know, coming back and being like in that place of like, I need to do, and just being like, and I don't really need to do, I can just be doing less is usually more.
That was my slogan running for class president as a kid, less is more.
Really?
I didn't win. Yeah, that's interesting. It's good insight there. Like, do you feel now also like, I know it's been a long time, and if you don't want to talk about this, just say so, but it's been a long time since like the eating disorder thing. But now that you're older and wiser, like, do you continue to like change your relationship with food, or do you feel like you have like a healthy relationship with it now, or do you like kind of eat whatever you want, or...
That's a great question. So it started with having to be on a meal plan. That was the only way I could kind of like eat. And then I learned how to mindfully eat. I'm still in the place of mindfully eating. And I think this is a somatic experience, right? Of being able to really tune into not only when you're hungry, but what specifically your body is asking for. So I still eat in that way. I don't like to cook. It's not something, you know, some people, like I have people that help me like with my social media, and they'll be like, well, send me all these videos of you like making your healthy meals. And I'm like, yeah, well, that's not a thing. That's not what I do.
Does your husband cook?
My husband does cook.
Oh, that helps.
Yeah. Yeah. He likes to cook. But I mean, I cook in a way where it's like, okay, I air fry the chicken and then it's like ready for the week, or, you know, I have things like prepared and ready. And it'll be rare that I like to like spend time on like cooking a meal, because I know that I can go to a restaurant and they can do it much better. And honestly, the cost is like the same. So why wouldn't I do that? At this point, it's not to me, it's more about nourishing my body, because of the eating disorder that I've had. I've caused a lot of issues to my system. And, I've also, I believe, created a lot of sensitivities to my system as well. And so there's just a lot of things that my body can't tolerate. So yes, I still, you know, I mindfully eat. I really pay attention to like, what does my, not just am I hungry again, but it's like my body needs blueberries. So that's telling me that I need antioxidants or something like that. You know, I'm in tune enough to know, yeah, that really what I need to like put into my body. And I know too, that like, if I eat a cookie, I'm not going to feel good. And I still do, because I mean, it's human to want to eat a cookie. Right. But, and then I just decide, it's like, well, I'm probably not going to feel great, but that's okay. Oh, you know, my body will recoup, and I can do it, you know, and it will recoup. But if I start to eat like a cookie on a daily basis, then it'll really kind of like start to spin me out of control.
Maybe the problem is it's a cookie. Maybe if you had four cookies, it'd be fine.
Maybe no,
you have to get through the threshold. It's funny. I do love to cook, but I also couldn't imagine like forgetting to eat. It's like a big part of my life. Like the joy, I get a lot of joy out of the whole procuring food and preparing it and eating it, and especially like feeding others. It's just, it's like,
yeah,
it's like how, it's one of the ways I get like fulfillment, like putting food on the table for other. And,
I find that fascinating.
We're all different. But it's good that your husband likes to cook. As both people don't like to cook, you can run into issues. Is there anything else as far as like the daily routine? You know, you're clearly more aware of like when the like work hamster wheel like grabs you, I guess, or whatever, and you pull back. Anything else in like the like evening rituals, or you talked about a morning ritual, getting out early, getting the sun, getting your feet on the ground. Anything else?
Yeah, there's always some point in the day where I will do like a somatic exercise of just like feeling through the body. And at nighttime, I put my phone on silent always. I used to have my phone on, I mean, it's on silent right now because we're in this, but a lot of times my phone is on silent and it really drives my husband crazy. But now he's come to know, like, that's just who I am. Be like, it's going to voicemail again. So
It makes a big
I'm
difference
really
though. Like not having
huge.
your phone. People don't realize the anxiety that all these noises on the phone are designed to like trigger to get you to pick the thing up. It's freeing to turn it off.
And I'll go and I leave without my phone. Like, I just think it's the best
That's
thing
brutal.
ever. And you know, one of my favorite things to do is go to like a 10-day silent meditation retreat. So that's no phones, no talking, no looking at people.
Oof, 10 days. That's hardcore, Karen.
So daily, I mean, I think a bigger thing is just the reflection at the end of the day. I mean, there's things that have been put into place now that I'm actually not married yet. We're getting married in April. So there's things that, are put into place of our relationship, of what we do, whether it's nervous system stuff or just like we're going through a different marriage course right now, right? So it's always shifting and changing, but I will say like the biggest thing is the somatic piece and being aware of what's going on in my body and being congruent with what my body needs.
Well, that sounds like very good advice. Karen, if people want to learn more or see if you're a good fit for their company or to work with you one-on-one, where do they go?
Yeah, they can visit my website at KarenAnnWellness.com.
Well, for the listeners out there, I am always grateful for your listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Karen, I hope our paths cross again sometime. I enjoyed talking to you today.
Yeah, thanks, Les. Take care.
Have a good day, everybody.